We're back recording at 9 o'clock. Dr. Cornwell.
Okay. It is. Is Mr. Allen here? Or do I? I'm trying to figure out whether or not to do one more.
Mr. Allen, are you present? He is not quite on yet. He did indicate he would be available.
Okay. Let's go to case number 20-21. Scott Sloan, physical therapist assistant.
So complaint 2021, Mr. Scott Sloan, PTA. Mr. Sloan failed to report his arrest for harassment on December 30th, 2019 within the 10-day required reporting.
Hello, can you hear me?
Is that Mr. Allen?
Yes, I was here. I was trying to unmute.
Okay, so we're just going to do this case and then we'll come right to your case, okay?
Okay, how do I just star six to unmute it?
I believe so.
Okay.
So, Mr. Sloan self-disclosed his arrest to the board on August 31st, 2020.
This is Peggy Hunter. I'm going to recuse myself from this case.
Okay. Peggy, there is a form for you to fill out and then get to me for that. Okay.
I certainly will.
Okay.
All right. By any chance, is Mr. Sloan here?
Yes, I'm outside of the building. I was wanting to be here in person, and they said that nobody could go to the second floor. So I've just been waiting for my name to be called.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, well, this is a virtual meeting, Mr. Sloan. We are not actually present at the building.
Yeah. They told me that, and when I said I wanted to be present, I should have said in person, which probably would have prompted a response. You can't be here because, well, you can't be here. So, yeah.
Well, you are here. You are here now.
Are you? I know you're. Even though you're outside, are you okay proceeding?
Sure.
Okay. All right. Since you're here, is there anything you'd like to, like an opening statement or? I assume that, you know, you might be willing to answer questions if board members have them.
Sure. No. Any questions that you have is fine. This was something that I expected to be dismissed because all the evidence proves that I'm innocent, yet they're still pushing this through a year later. I mean, everything physically says that I'm innocent, everything, including a deputy who is a witness, yet they're still pushing this through. So, I mean, I've got to go to Colorado in April. That's when the trial is going to be. And I will find out what they're going to do. I mean, literally, my lawyer has already said I have a civil case against the state for wrongful arrest and wrongful prosecution. Yet the DA is still pushing this through. And it is my presumption that it is going to be a state employee who's going to be the one who's going to be the one that eviscerates me on the stand, but there's no physical evidence. It's beyond me, but I'm at the mercy of everybody right now. So that's kind of where I am right now.
Okay, thank you. Do any board members have questions for Mr. Sloan?
I was on mute. Sorry, Dr. King. I don't have any questions for Mr. Sloan. As I was reading through all of the documents, it sounds very complicated and unfortunate. And I just needed to remind myself that the finding that the complaint is that he failed to report this.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was that directed to me?
It's Dr. King. And so that, regardless of innocence and all of the details of this, I think at the end of the day, the reason that we're speaking to you is that you failed to report this arrest to the board.
Okay. And my reasoning, I sent an email on this, if you could find that or I can forward it to you later for the other board members to see, because I believe it went to Karen Donahue. is that within the 10 days, there was a lot going on. Now, what had happened is that a nurse practitioner had called me. I had not had power of attorney for over a year. And there was no reason for that nurse practitioner to call me. She told me there's a problem with my mom's medication. My mom takes lisinopril. If she doesn't take that, she will stroke. And 2 days later, I received a call from my half-brother, a text message that my mom had a stroke. 2 days after that, I received another text message from my sister-in-law saying that, oh, well, she's only taking in water now, and she's on hospice, and she's about, and they're just going to let her die. Well, being a PTA, immediately that thing started flagging into my mind. Why is this nurse practitioner getting hold of me when there's no reason? Was that fate? Was it karma? Whatever. Then she has a stroke. Well, I hadn't been able to talk to my mom for a year because the sister was draining my mother's bank account and other things, which I'm not going to get into because there's open litigation on this. But right. The fact that all this is going on and I'm being falsely accused and arrested, and I told the detective there's evidence to prove that I'm innocent. And they didn't care, and they rushed over to a judge, and they filed charges against me. I was in Red Bluff, California at the time, 900 miles from home, and I'm rushing around trying to find out what's going on. And it just, it didn't even dawn on me to get a hold of the board when my mom is dying, and I've got all this on top of me, on my head, you know, and I'm not home. That's my reasoning. I mean, that's it. I mean, if you want to penalize me for that, then penalize me for that. But that was the situation at the time, and it's, my mom is dead now. I know that she didn't last. I mean, after that stroke, even though neuroplasty is always happening, she was 88 years old at the time, and no one will tell me that she's passed away. I mean, nobody will even tell me, not even my attorney will tell me that she's passed away, but on purpose that she did. So that's also something that I live with, and, you know, that's what I live with.
Mr. Sloan, I please know that you have our most sincere condolences on this situation with your mom and how complicated it is to manage family dynamics, especially remotely with lots of things that you can't control. I think for us as a board, or me as a board member, you know, listening to the cases where someone failed to report, there's always so much going on around an arrest. It's a very traumatic, stressful time. Yet we do have a state board that we have to be consistent with, you know, upholding that regardless of the outcome of guilty or not guilty or whatnot, we do have a rule that the board is to be notified within a certain period of time of any sort of legal infraction or arrest or regardless. And so that is where we're at, is certainly recognizing that it sounds terribly traumatic for you in the moment, but we do have an obligation to be consistent.
Oh, forgive me for jumping in. No, the rest, no, that means nothing to me. The fact that this woman kept me from speaking to my mom for a year, an entire damn year, and I called. Everything is documented. Everything is written in stone. Everything. She suffered not being able to talk to her youngest son, the most important thing on the planet to her. And then within a span of three communications, all of a sudden, she's dying. When she shouldn't have been dying, she should have been living here with me in Scottsdale when the VA was taking care of her for an entire year. Every single day, including a nurse that came out every Tuesday, give her a health check and to make sure, and to fill her pillbox. A mandatory reporter, just like you are and just like I am. And she was kept for me, and now she's dying because she was neglected by this individual. Okay, forget the arrest. The fact that this person did this to my mom, That was the most devastating. I don't care if these people in the state of Colorado stab me in the neck and find me guilty for whatever reason, for something that I know that I didn't do. I have evidence that proves that I didn't do it. But then I have to live with that if it goes through. But I already know that I'm innocent, regardless of what anybody says. Regarding this right here, Forget the arrest. It's all about my mom, the most important thing on the planet to me. Once again, if you want to penalize me, penalize me. I really don't care. I care about what this woman did to my mom. I really don't care. Whatever you guys need to do, that's your job. Do it. I don't care. All I care about is my mom and how she suffered. And that's kind of how I feel about it. It's just a rough time. And then the pandemic on top of that. So it's like, you know, a double whammy. So I understand anything that you guys have to do, and it is what it is. So thanks for allowing me to ramble on like that.
Yes, you're welcome. Absolutely.
Does any board members have other questions or would like to make a motion? Well, to at least get a discussion, if nothing else, let me move that we offer him an advisory letter outlining the requirements to report regardless of the situations.
Second.
All right. So now we're in discussion on the motion. What does everybody think?
This is just a very sad situation for Mr. Sloan and his family, and I appreciate how difficult it had to have been to think about trying to report within a 10-day period when you just had so many millions of emotions flooding through your body. And especially when he felt so wronged. I'm inclined to agree with the advisory letter, but I really feel like his perspective needs to be taken a little bit more seriously in terms of his certificate for practice.
Okay.
I think in the, I'm trying to recall, I had to pull up all my notes. When we've had other situations of failure to report, and we have even some on this agenda, I believe there was a CEU or there was something to help the therapist or assistant, just recalling the rules and regs of the board.
Dr. King, there's no non-disciplinary way to do that.
Yeah.
So I think beyond the current motion, I think we're looking at a board order, correct? Or a consent?
A consent.
Or something like that.
Right.
So I want everybody to make, you know, understand that if you're not comfortable with the current motion, then we defeat it and start with something different. Okay.
Yep. Thank you.
Anybody else? Does everybody have enough information that they feel like they can vote on the current motion? Then Karen, let's call the question.
Okay. So for complaint 2021, Mr. Scott Sloan, PTA, the motion is for an advisory letter to remind Mr. Sloan of the requirement to report. Dr. King.
No.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Ms. Hunter?
She's recused.
I'm recused.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Clinton?
No.
Ms. Bastillo?
Yes.
Dr. Cornwell?
Yes.
The motion passes. He'll be issued an advisory letter.
Okay. All right. Mr. Sloan, thank you for participating. Sorry you were stuck outside.
That's right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Let's move back to item 4A, case number 20-03, Mitchell Allen. Allen, Mr. Allen, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, great. By any chance, are you represented by counsel?
No, I'm not.
Okay. and this is an informal hearing. I have something I need to read. So let me find it. Okay.
Okay.
So I'm going to call them this matter, case number 20-03, to order. It's being audio recorded. And let's have the board members, staff, and council introduce themselves.
Dr. King, professional member.
Here.
Mr. Greer, public member.
Here.
Ms. Hunter, professional member.
Present.
Mr. Clinton, public member.
Here.
Dr. Bastillo, professional member.
Here.
Dr. Cornwell, professional member.
Here.
Mr. Harris, Assistant Attorney General.
Here.
Ms. Cardoza, staff.
Present.
Ms. Richardson, staff.
Present.
Ms. Crowley, staff.
Here.
Ms. Chepia, staff.
Here.
And I'm Karen Donahue, Executive Director.
Okay, with the certificate holder, please introduce themselves.
Yeah, I'm Mitchell Allen. I'm Pete, physical therapist assistant.
Okay. And Peggy, you're back on, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, just want to make sure. All right. this interview, this informal hearing is being held pursuant to ARS 32-2046. The purpose of an informal hearing is to hear relevant facts by way of testimony and exhibits to determine if a violation of any of the board's statutes or rules has occurred. If the board finds a violation, it may take any or all of the following disciplinary action. One, issue a decree of censure. Two, place restrictions upon a licensee's practice. Three, issue a civil penalty of not more than $500. Four, issue other disciplinary action. Five, issue a non-disciplinary order requiring completion of continuing education as specified by the board. If the board finds the violation or possible violation of statute or rule is not sufficiently serious to warrant disciplinary action, the board may issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter. If the board finds that there was no violation of the board's statutes and rules, the board may dismiss the case. If the board finds that the violations warrant suspension or revocation of the license, the board shall vote the matter to a formal hearing. Okay. Mr. Allen, do you have anyone else who plans to speak in your behalf?
Have anybody else?
Yeah.
No, I will speak.
Okay, I just want to know if there was anybody else we needed to recognize, that's all.
Okay. No.
All right. So, would you like to make a brief opening statement? Before you do that, let's have an overview of the complaint.
So, Ms. Richardson, if you'd give an overview of the complaint and also identify the three potential violations of law, please.
Yes. Let me bring it up. Based on the investigation, I'll just read the potential violations. I don't remember, Karen, do I read the actual citation ARS?
Yes.
ARS. Okay.
There's three violations, ARS 3224-5, engaging in the performance of substandard care by physical therapist assistant, ARS 3224-13, charging unreasonable or fraudulent fees for services performed or not performed, and ARS 3224-14, making misleading, deceptive, untrue, or fraudulent representations in violation of this chapter or in the practice of the profession. The complaint is that a fellow, a coworker, a physical therapist, alleged that Mr. Allen documented treating a patient on 12/30/19 when the patient was hospitalized from 12/28 to 1/2/20. This case is for your review.
Mindy, are these allegations, and my thing is for the board to possibly apply violations that may apply. Are they in as the record of things that he's being charged with?
I'm gonna interrupt you for just a minute. Dr. Cornwell, we need to swear everybody in, please.
Say that again.
Dr. Cornwell, we need to swear in the witnesses.
Okay. All right. So all those who will be testifying in this hearing, would you please raise your right hand? So Mr. Allen, wherever you are, just raise your right hand.
Okay.
Do you all swear to tell the truth and nothing but the truth?
Ms. Richardson?
Yes,
Ms. Richardson? I do. Mr. Allen?
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Sorry, Ms. Hunter, please continue.
It just says, upon review of this informal hearing brief, staff identified the following possible statute violations that may apply.
That's correct. These are allegations.
Okay. Yes. So except we haven't actually agreed that those should apply yet, is my question.
So the way the process goes is that the board forward this to an informal hearing with the potential three violations up for consideration. There are no other violations of law that can be considered at this time.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so Mr. Allen, would you like to make an opening statement?
No, I don't think I need to.
You don't have to. This is an opportunity if you'd like to take it.
I'll say that when I went to the facility and I was pointed towards the patient in the dining room and by a caregiver that was there, and I didn't identify the patient, and that's who I treated. So that was okay. My mistake.
All right, and I'm assuming that you'd be willing to answer questions if a board member has them, right?
Oh yeah, no problem.
Okay. So does anyone on the board have questions for Mr. Allen?
Mr. Allen, this is Peggy Hunter. I'm curious why you didn't put, sorry, I don't see his name. Is it Rich as your supervising physical therapist?
So in the past, when Rich went in on vacation in the past, I was directed to keep him as my supervising therapist, even though he was gone, because I was still updating him. And they used to have a different therapist there. His name was Josh. And the first time I would use Josh as my supervising therapist, and Rich really, I don't know, for some reason didn't like that. Rich just still wanted me to use him. Because I was still updating him. He didn't want to fall behind on his patients. And so that's what I was instructed to keep doing. So okay, but that's what they did.
You do realize when you put somebody down as your supervising physical therapist that they're supposed to be able to get to the facility within a reasonable time, et cetera. So, you know, regardless of what they think, that doesn't make very good sense.
If there was like a fall, or if there was an emergency or something like that, then they said use whoever, like if if Josh or somebody else was in the area, that's who I reported to, then use them. Otherwise, use who was the case manager. That's what they told me.
Okay, well, you know, I'm a PTA, and regardless of what people tell you, you need to do what is within the rules and laws of Arizona, not what people tell you.
Okay.
So my other question is, you know, it's unfortunate that you went into this facility and you asked staff where this gentleman was, and they pointed him out. Had you ever treated him before?
I seen him one time before, like the previous week. That's the only other time I seen him.
Okay. Do they wear any type of identification badge in their wrist or anything?
I was in that facility two other times, like 3 or 4 months before that. And the lady I saw before did, but this gentleman had no identification on when I saw him the first time.
So you just took the word of the staff?
I took the word of the staff that pointed him out.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Mr. Allen, just a super quick question. This is Dr. King. I think the notes indicated that you had treated this patient before. So this was not your first time with this patient. Can you help us understand how you weren't aware that it was not the same patient on this for this session?
I treat so many people, and it probably looked just like them. If I see one person, I don't always exactly remember exactly what they look like.
So that being said, if you have that large of a caseload, how do you ensure you're treating the patients you're supposed to be treating then? What is your methodology in identifying
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's
good. Since this happened, like, I'm sure to identify everyone, ask their name. And I mean, I guess I want to say this taught me a lesson, because that 3 times since this happened, made sure that I asked someone, and someone else has been in the room, and it kept me from like finding the right patient.
Okay, so let me make sure I understand what you were saying. So you said since this time, you do other things besides just asking someone, because just asking someone would have led you to the wrong patient. So what is it that you do to identify the correct patient that you'll be working with?
Like I went into a different facility and I asked the person their name and if they could tell me the date of birth. And if they give me the wrong name, then I found that their daughter lived with them. She was in the back of the room, and so it kept me from making the same mistake.
Thank you.
Mr. Allen, this is Dr. Cornwall. Can you take me through how you go about checking when you go into the facility, this one in particular and others, how do you get the information about their current medical status? Whether or not they've gone to the hospital, or they've fallen that night before, or something that would alert you that things have changed? What's the process you go through to verify the medical status before you see them?
So when I go into a facility, I go in, sign in at the front desk, and if some of them have a wellness director or nurse, I will talk to them before I go in. Ones that don't, I always call my patients the night before. and I'll talk to them. And they'll let me know, most depending upon how well the patient is, they'll let me know if they've had a fall, or if a family member answers, they'll tell me if they ever, if they're in the hospital.
So how did you miss that this particular patient wasn't even there? He was in the hospital.
Some of them, like, they just have, they don't answer and I leave a message. Or like, even now, some of them don't answer and I leave a message and I tell them I'll be there between this time and this time, and I show up to see them because they don't return my call.
Well, if they don't answer your call, you don't know really what's going on. You don't know whether or not they're in a hospital, or if they their family took them home for a visit, or if they passed away. How do you know that they're actually there?
Well, I don't. And some of them, like, they don't really even, because some of them live in, not all of them are in group homes. Some of them are live with their son or daughter, and they just don't answer the phone.
Yeah.
And I know that they don't answer the phone, and it's okay to show up.
Okay. Well, the one we're talking about was in a facility, correct?
Oh yeah. So he's in a facility.
So did you talk to the charge nurse? Did you go and read the patient's chart?
No, I mean,
what has changed?
Oh, I went in and signed in. I mean, it was a year ago. I just know I signed in, and I don't really have access to their charts.
You don't?
Uh-uh.
Why is that?
I don't know. I know one time, I remember one time when I was with LHC, they told me at a different facility in Mesa to try to get some notes from one of the nurses. And this was at a place in Mesa. And I talked to four or five different people just to try to get notes. And they ended up having to call from LHC to say it was okay. I get them. They didn't want to give me anything.
How do you feel comfortable that something hasn't happened since the last time you visited them that you need to alert the physical therapist? I'm trying to understand. What do you do to ensure that the not only the patient is there, who they are, but if anything has changed?
Well, I don't know if anything changed until the next time I go and see them.
Well, yeah, but
usually when I go see them, that's when I'll talk to a caregiver, or depending upon the patient's state of mind, they'll be able to tell me if they fall in, if they this or that. Like, they don't really let me have access to their paperwork. That's why I talk to a caregiver.
Well, that process fell short this time, didn't it? He wasn't even, he was in the hospital. He wasn't even there.
Dr. Cornwell, may I ask a question of Mr. Allen?
Sure.
Mr. Allen, what type of communication do you have with your physical therapist prior to seeing these patients on each day?
Well, I through Tiger Text. Well, back then we didn't have Tiger Text, but I would, with Rich, Kaya, I would let them know who I was going to see the next day. At the same time, I would let them know who I seen and how they did that day.
This is Dr. Bustillo. So, Mr. Allen, are you just given a list on a daily basis or a weekly basis of the people that you're supposed to see?
Yeah, it populates on my weekly schedule.
So on a weekly basis, then you're given a list. Does it update?
And it updates? Is that what you asked?
I mean, so if you're given a list, let's say Sunday night for the week, or Monday morning, or however that works. So would the schedule actually maybe change on Tuesday if something had changed?
So yeah, if somebody, if they got a new admission or it could change once a new admission, someone could be added. So it could change throughout the week, but usually by Sunday, I would have my schedule, but it could change throughout the week.
Okay.
So Mr. Allen, this is Peggy Hunter again, just so I understand. When you go into one of these facilities, you are not allowed to look at the patient's file to see if there's any updates on medication, surgeries, or anything. You have to rely on the caregivers to tell you.
Yeah, I have to ask the caregivers. I mean, that was my experience over at the one in Mesa.
All right, thank you.
So Ms. Hunter, members of the board, the difference most likely, Mr. Allen, was the fact that you were requesting to take records out of the facility, which would require a bunch more paperwork for you to take a patient record out of the facility. But that should not impede you from being able to look at a patient record to determine the status of the patient on that day.
Mr. Allen,
I'm not saying I can't determine a status of a patient. I usually talk to the caregiver or the wellness director, and they usually give me an update on the status.
So that the day you went in there, the day that we're talking about, what did the caregiver tell you about the status of that patient?
On that over there, they didn't have a wellness director. Well, they do have one, but they didn't. The caregiver pointed me to them. Well, I asked two caregivers. I remember the one I asked, is this patient here? Because it wasn't in the room. And they pointed me over to, the first one said, if he's not in his room, he's probably just finishing lunch. And then I asked the next one, and he pointed them to me, and that's all they said.
Mr. Allen, can you tell us what is the electronic medical record or the documentation process that you use to document your intervention? How do you do it? Where do you do it? Is it computerized? And is there any access to patient charts in the EMR?
So back then when I was seeing him, it was electronic and it was, I can't remember I can't think of the name of it.
And was the physical therapy evaluation accessible in the same EMR that you were documenting in?
Well, they had anyone that like Rich or Kaya or any of them did, I could look back on them. Whatever they did prior, I could see. And that's what the nurses did. I could look at those.
So you do have access to the nurses' notes.
Any of the nurses from the company I was with.
Which would not be the same people as the nurses in the facility?
Yeah, not the same, not the facility, just from if I was with LHC at home healthcare, any of our nurses that went out there.
Oh, okay.
So I'm sorry if I'm not understanding this correctly. When you go into the facility, do you not write in the patient's chart that you were there and what you did?
Yeah, I did. I do note what we did.
So you had access to his chart?
Oh yeah, I thought you meant like to his chart in the facility.
I do mean that.
No, I don't. I have access to his chart, like what we keep, what we did, but not his chart like they keep in the facility.
With home health, they will have their own computer and their own home health system that comes in. It just happens that this person was in a facility. That doesn't happen often, or it's not There's plenty of instances in home health where there is no facility, there is no medical record besides the one that the PTA has.
I understand that. I just would think in a facility like this, because I've done home health, in a facility like this, they would have some records where they would want recorded what any medical professional had done to their patient in that facility, regardless of the home health chart.